And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the first Monday of the month from 3 to 4, we now have Practical Business Solutions starring Jim Hyten from Right Now, Hyten and Lewis, a great, 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 great law firm. And I mean great with a big exclamation mark. Exclamation mark.
Well, thank you.
Exclamation mark.
Thank you.
Now you're embarrassed. But no, Jim, I've known Jim a long time, right? 14 years, 10 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's...
No, really, I just can't rave enough about your firm. I always say it, I just can't help myself. It's just something to experience. That's all I can say. So, but it is a great firm. And, Jim, we're really honored to have a great guest in studio today, Matt Kenny from BWSI. And that stands for Businessware Services Incorporated, Software and Services for Staffing Agencies. We're going to have a great show today.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
You're going to talk about the comp. Oh, well, first of all, Matt, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I almost said welcome. I forgot to say welcome because I see him a lot at where?
Wildflower.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Wildflower Bread Company, not only the one in AMC where we met and became friends, but I see you now on Bell and 75th Avenue.
Yes, I still go with Jen and Lori, though. I go to both.
Yeah, see, you had shared custody. I had full custody over
absolutely
75th Avenue and Bell. And but anyway, yeah, I've known you for at least a year or two now.
Oh, easy.
Yeah, easy. And it's sort of fun. And it's real fun because Matt is a phenomenal sports guy. I mean, phenomenal.
He knows
everything about sports, right?
Yeah. I'm not much of a basketball guy, so March Madness doesn't do much for me. But if you want to talk hockey, Frozen Four, baseball, Yankees, I'm in.
And Rattlers. And I think the Mercury, right?
Oh, yeah. Big Mercury fan. Can't wait to see Brittany in Mercury gear. It's going to be kind of nice.
Oh, but they didn't do so well. Yeah. Baylor gets upset yesterday.
Yeah. Tough night for Brittany.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, but they were hitting three-pointers from the park a lot. I mean, it was just insane some of the shots that were going down.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Has he met Damian?
Oh,
our sports guy?
Yeah, Damian's on our sports show sometimes, usually once a month.
Okay.
Great attorney, again, from, Right Now, Hyten and Lewis, but he's quite a sports guy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's March Madness. He loves the March Madness. So.
Yeah, it's if LSU's not in, I don't follow.
Yeah, there we LSU grad right here. Uh-huh. So we're going to talk about the comp time bill as well as the health care. It's Affordable Health Care.
Patient Protection Affordable Care Act.
That's what it was.
As most people call it, Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it meets its title, right? Yeah, I don't know.
The Affordable Care was a little bit of a misnomer. So
yeah, let's hope. Let's hope that's the case. But so the comp time bill, let's hear what you have to say. It might affect a lot of people.
Actually, I'm really excited about it. Congresswoman Martha Roby, Republican, 2nd District, Alabama, is going to introduce the bill in the House of Representatives this month. What it is it's basically an extension of a right that federal, state, and local employees have had since 1985, federal since 78, I believe.
Wow.
Where if you work overtime, you can elect to be paid for it, or you can take an hour and a half of comp time and bank that. So it would allow a lot of workplace flexibility. It would allow you to bank up to 160 hours a year. Mm-hmm. It has to be mutually agreed upon in writing by the employer and the employee. It will allow an employee, because there's a huge class of employees that has no concept of paid time off. It just doesn't exist, particularly in what I would term a vulnerable wage population. A lot of our clients that are staffing agencies, obviously, do not offer paid time off.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So this would allow some form of paid time off. It's a liability already on the employer's books. You have to pay the overtime. So realistically speaking, there's no downside for an employer except some minor accounting issues to track the time. You cash it out at the end of the year, and it just really does a lot for workplace flexibility. That's one of the big things that I hear from a lot of my customers and their people as well. I have to take my son to a doctor, but I have to schedule that around work, particularly when you're a contingent worker, you don't call the employer. You have to call the staffing agency and say, hey, I can't be there till 10. What do I do? there's just a lot of benefits with it. I'm really excited about it. I've already got a meeting scheduled with Congressman David Schweikert, who is the representative here in Arizona where my company's based, to try to get him to support it. The Society for Human Resource Management is one of the lead advocates of the bill, because as human resource professionals, it's one of the things that we agree on a lot is that workplace flexibility and how it's going to affect our workforce.
I like that, Jim. Workplace flexibility.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, does the paid time off? It's just on based on a yearly.
So
you don't have to take it in the same pay period it accrues.
Absolutely. Okay. You cash it out at the end of the year, and after, I believe the way the bill is going to be written is after 80 hours have been accrued, as the employer, you can cash that out and not have to use you to make your bookkeeping much easier.
Right.
So it's definitely a user to lose it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to work over 1,000 hours. So it's not like you have to extend this. Well, a part-time person probably would not get overtime.
Right.
And the big thing I really like about it is it's mutually beneficial. The employee and the employer both decide whether they want to do it. They agree to it in writing. It's not a unilateral across-the-board decision. There's some accounting issues with it. You have to track it. From an engineering standpoint, on my side, I have to deal with workers' comp because you audit that on your gross payroll, but you have this bucket that you've incurred the liability, but it's not on your gross payroll yet. But other than that, I don't see a downside, not only as a business owner, but as somebody that deals with a lot of employees and contingent workforce, I see as a huge benefit.
Let me ask you this. Let's move over to Jim for a second. Jim, some of your clients, I could see some maybe clients of mine as a CPA, maybe clients of yours. Let's say you have a business owner, and Matt, you're in on this too, for comments. What if the business owner is not very disciplined? You got a whole bunch of people trying to cash out at the end of the year, and whoops, you've already spent that money. Jim, you go first.
Well,
problem.
I think you'd have to almost be looking at almost establishing a little bit of a reserve fund, so you had the money, so you didn't wind up at the end of the year with no money and a big liability you owe to the employees. I'm sure the feds will have something in the law that would cause some penalties if you don't pay it out on time.
Absolutely. I would say you'd set it up just like an impound account like you do for payroll taxes.
Okay.
When the liability is incurred, impound the money. Benefit for the employer, I get to sit that in a sweep account and collect interest on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, of course, interest rates right now aren't the greatest thing, but, hey, we'll take what we can get.
That makes sense.
But I think it also it helps the flexibility because, as I was saying before the show, we've had clients where the employees want to have this kind of paid time off provision, and yet they can't do that. I mean, it's very restrictive right now. I think the comp time has to be used within the same pay period or something, so it's very difficult when you're on a two-week pay period to make that work. So if you can do it over a year, I think you're going to have a lot of employees are going to say, I'd rather bank some, you know, comp time during the year and see, you know, if I need it during the year. And if they do, you know, it's there for them. And for the employer, I think it's also beneficial.
Well, it makes total sense, Matt. I think especially, let's say you come in, you're new in the company, and some companies may you can't accrue vacation for at least a year. And now you can start accruing some stuff and maybe have a pretty good chunk of time to take your family. It really has an impact beyond just the workplace, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's one of those kind of bills that when you read it, this is common sense. Federal employees have had it for years.
Yeah.
State and local have had it. From a business owner's perspective, I see no downside. I can't imagine a downside. It's also a great recruiting tool if you decide to take advantage of it. Mm. One of the things with the National Study on the Changing Workforce was a big survey. Four in five employees said that workplace flexibility was a key issue when deciding whether to take a position or not.
Wow, really?
So, and then one in four said they don't have that flexibility right now. So right now in the economy now where it's just picking up, you know, you may have 10 applicants for one position, but I've been around long enough to remember the day where you had 10 positions for two applicants.
Right.
So it's definitely something that anything you can add to your human resources toolbox as a benefit is a win-win in my situation.
So is it one of these situations where if, let's say the bill passes, you have a company and they can Taylor make it to just one employee, or once you accept this, it has to be the whole company?
It's an individual case-by-case basis.
That's pretty cool.
That's the awesome thing about the bill.
Wow.
I could also, if I elect to as an employer, say, let an employee accrue 16 hours of this comp time, and then the rest of their overtime they want to be paid. No problem.
Oh,
so they've got 2 days sitting there in the bank if they need them. Because most people, especially in this economy, I need my money. I need to be paid, especially time and a half rates. So it allows you to balance out and really have a lot of flexibility in the workforce. It's just one of those things. It's almost too common sense. Like, why don't we have this?
That's why it won't get a lot of press, because it's too common sense for Congress to be, you know, considering this kind of bill. But it's great, because, I mean, if you can tailor that with each employee, I mean, that's terrific. And you know, you could see a lot of application here. In fact, I was just sitting here thinking that in your business, Dave, and the CPA firm business, where you have these periods of time during the year where everybody works night and day around tax time, where the employees could accrue that time off and then take that time off in some of the slower times. I mean, I'll bet you they would like that.
Very much. Yeah, they need a little rest and recuperation after tax season. Wait, what am I doing here during tax season? But let me ask you this, and then we'll take a quick break. Let me ask you, what would be the argument against this, and who would argue that up in Washington?
Easy.
Oh, okay. What is it? I couldn't figure it out, right, Jim?
This is going to be an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Oh.
Anytime you look sideways, breathe, mention FLSA, organized labor is going to come out generally. Even though it makes a lot of sense, the way the bill is going to be structured is it can even be included in collective bargaining. So the way the bill is worded, the way I understand it right now, is if you're subject to collective bargaining, it still has to be agreed on as part of the collective bargaining process. And then it also still has to be agreed on between the employer and the employee on a case-by-case basis. So it's really a win-win. Whether they're going to come out against it or not, I can't say. I know a similar bill was introduced, I believe, in the 111th Congress, and organized labor did come out against it.
Really?
However, Eric Cantor has agreed to bring this to the floor, so it will get a vote, at least in the House. Now, whether it gets introduced in the Senate, I can't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah, I can't see why they wouldn't vote that in.
That's amazing. So federal, state, local employees have this benefit. They've had it for years. But organized labor would be against giving this to private employers, even though it's got to be agreed upon by everybody in writing before it goes into
effect. Doesn't even make sense.
Well, and most of these federal, state, and local employees are unionized.
Yeah.
So I can't say for certain, but my understanding is that the last time the bill was introduced, there was a pushback. And that's who pushed back. Whether they're still going to do that.
Yeah.
I think the way the wording of the bill has been changed a little bit, that should make it more agreeable to organize. I hope it's more agreeable.
Yeah.
Have you heard if both parties are sort of okay with this, or is there one party not, then one party yes?
I haven't spoken to anybody yet legislatively that is against this. I have several meetings set up with local, our House people, members and our senators. And then I've reached out to some other people, and I've networked with people. Since Society of Human Resource Management is the lead advocate on the bill, obviously they're pushing it. So there's 260,000 members in SHRM. So I get to network with them, and everybody is on board with this that I have spoken with.
Well, that's sort of cool. I think we've had Kirsten Sinema on our show before, as well as a lot of different folks from the other political side. And I'd be interested what her take is on this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe we'll try to get her.
Yeah.
Tommy, call her up in Washington. Okay, just kidding. Let's take a quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. Matt, do we have a few more things on the comp time bill, do you think? Or you want to go into health care?
Oh, no, we're going to hit health care.
Oh, health care. I can't wait to hear that, and we'll be right back.
Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the first Monday of each month from 3 to 4, it's Practical Business Solutions starring Jim Hynten, Ridenour, Hynten and Lewis. Let's give out your number. I just want people to know about your firm.
Okay. Our number is area code 602-254-9900.
Excellent. And 602-254-9900, right?
9900.
Well, that sounds... Yeah.
Simple enough.
It's the same way of saying 9900. So,
right.
Anyway, either way, you'll get there. And we have in studio guest Matt Kenny, BWSI, Software and Services for Staffing Agencies. And we talked about the comp time bill. Very interesting. We're hoping this goes through. And if you missed any of this, you can go on breakradioshow.com, breakradioshow.com, under Archives, Practical Business Solutions, and hear a replay of what you missed. You don't want to miss it. But now, ladies and gentlemen, how do we call it? Obamacare or the by the official name of the...
PAPACA.
Okay.
A lot of people just call it PAPACA. It's easy, it's short, it's compact.
Anyway, it's Affordable...
Patient Protection Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, that is what it is. So I'll give it over to Jim. What was the first thing? Several things you want to ask. But actually, let's give your background a little bit, why you know this pretty well.
Well, I'm a member of the Dysart Unified School Board Benefits Trust. I'm a board member on the trust board. So we've been dealing – the trust board is what deals with all of the employee benefits for all the teachers and employees in the Dysart Unified School District. Oh. So I've been dealing with this basically since the bill passed.
Wow.
And how we have to – how we've had to make changes, things like that. And then because of what I do with personnel services, the healthcare law is a titanic shift in how they're going to have to do business, because historically personnel services have never offered benefits.
Oh, interesting.
So it's really been knee-deep in the weeds as far as the ins and outs of the law. It changes. We're up to 13 different facts on just the healthcare law. There's still open periods for comments on guidance issued by the different regulatory agencies. It's not even finalized yet.
Oh. Hmm. Oh. That sounds tough.
OSHA, welcome to the party in February, finally. primarily, we've been dealing with IRS, Health and Human Services, and DOL, Department of Labor. But in February, OSHA jumped into the party. They're going to be responsible for the whistleblower part of the act. Thank gosh that they're still going to use – if people are familiar with OSHA and their whistleblower anti-retaliation functionality, they're still going to use the same way that they handle that like they do in Sarbanes-Oxley. So if you've ever had to deal with something like that, it's just – it's the same process that's going to be used – that's used currently with SOX. But for example, if I want to – if I'm an employee and I want to report that this essential benefit was denied or my plan doesn't – isn't really truly 60% actuarial value, I can report that. There's a defined process to go through. The employer gets investigated. You have a chance to answer. But that – guidance just came out in February, and the comment period doesn't close. I believe it's April 23rd on that. Mm-hmm. One of the major comment periods on IRS, it's 2012-58, which is what they call the look-back measurement period. That just closed March 18th. And so final guidelines have not been issued on that. So there, it's really fluid. We have a lot better understanding about where it's going to go, but it's definitely not set in stone.
Sounds like a moving target, Jim.
Yeah, really.
That's not really easy. So what are your clients asking you, and then we can ask Matt his opinion?
You know, I think what most of the people that I work with are asking is that this year they were fine. I mean, they were able to renew their health insurance, and the premium went up some, but not catastrophic. Now they're hearing in the media that premiums may go up anywhere from 40 to 100% for 2014. So they're saying, okay, now what? If that happens, most of them can't afford that. That's
right.
Just it's impossible. So what do they do? Do they basically say, well, we can't afford it anymore, so we're not going to pay for it, so everybody's on their own for health care? And even a lot of the people we deal with who are entrepreneurs who are starting, you know, their big thing is a lot of people say, well, that's great. I'd like to come work for your company. It's a startup. It's great. Looks like we're going to make a lot of money, but I don't want to give up my benefits. And so they're looking at the same thing. You know, how am I going to afford these benefits for healthcare when that's one of the primary benefits anybody wants when they go to work for somebody?
Absolutely. One of the big problems with the healthcare law is not only does your plan have to cover essential health benefits, which is a slate of services, it also has to offer what's called 60% actuarial value, meaning that the plan itself covers 60% of the cost of those essential health services. And then the employee is then responsible for the other 40%. That's what's termed a bronze plan.
Mm-hmm.
As you start getting into some of the plans, you're going to hear a lot of bronze, silver, gold, and platinum, 60, 70, 80, 90% actuarial value. So you have that part of it, designing a plan for that. And then furthermore, the plan has to be affordable. This is what's going to trip everybody up, is the plan, the employee co-share of the premium for employee only. I don't have to worry about children, dependents.
Mm-hmm.
For employee only, cannot exceed 9.5% of either one of three things: box one on their W-2, their rate of pay, which is their current hourly rate times 130 hours per month,
mm-hmm.
or the federal poverty level for one person. Now, designing a 60% actuarial value plan that's going to be affordable under those three safe harbors, I haven't seen too many yet.
Right, right.
So the affordability aspect, now here's where the problem comes in. If I, as a business owner, offer a plan that meets essential health benefits that has 60% actual over air value, a bronze plan, but it's not affordable, deemed affordable to some of my employees, I'm then looking at a $3,000 penalty per employee that goes and gets a tax subsidy to buy their plan from the exchange. And that is called a 1411 certification that comes from Health and Human Services that certifies that the employee is eligible for this tax credit to purchase a subsidy to purchase their plan from the state exchange.
Now, Arizona didn't set up an exchange, so the people in Arizona would have to go to the federal exchange to find their
plans. Arizona elected not to set their exchange up, so the federal government is going to run it for them.
Okay. Okay.
There are a lot of states, mostly Republican states, that elected not to set up these exchanges. The fun part is they're supposed to start enrolling in these exchanges in October 1st. Well, nobody even knows the plans that are going to be offered, who's offering them.
Right.
I just got back from Washington, D.C. The overwhelming sentiment is they're not going to be ready by October 1st. What that means, how that happens, when it gets pushed back, nobody knows at this point. But that's going to be a very big deal.
So let me ask you this.
Certainly.
Can anyone go to an exchange? Just anyone.
Just anybody can purchase their insurance from the exchange.
Is there the advantage is it's in theory cost containment for them, in theory? No?
Okay, there's so many disadvantages to having to go to the exchange, right?
Oh.
Okay, first and foremost, it's not tax advantaged for you as a person. Most people, their benefits are covered on what's called a Section 125 plan in the IRS, which means I pay for my benefits with pre-tax income, which reduces my taxable income. If I go to the exchange, it's not pre-tax income. So I'm instantaneously have to deal with the FICA coming out and all my state and local taxes before I even get my net wages, which I can then go purchase insurance from the exchange.
So a solo corporation, one shareholder employee corporation couldn't purchase it from an exchange?
They could. You absolutely can.
But then
it's
not
beneficial financially, generally speaking,
but
as opposed to group insurance.
Yeah, so for example, a medical reimbursement plan might work, Jim. That's something we could look at.
An MRA, there's a lot of things. There was some guidance just issued related to MRAs about using, like, for example, I can't use an HSA to pay my premium. Legal.
So I wonder if they did away with the medical reimbursement plan because a lot of, right?
Potentially they could, yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of changes that are related to that because that was one of the first things people thought. I'll just set up an HSA, use the HSA to pay for my premium. Yeah, the IRS, I had a meeting with the Office of Chief Counsel when I was there. That's not going to pass. That's not
maybe a medical reimbursement plan where if you're a sole shareholder, we don't know, we'll have to check it out, but sole shareholder, you're the only employee.
Right.
You pay it, the corporation, if it's in, if you elect to have it, can reimburse you for that. So you can get a pre-tax deal if they allow the medical reimbursement plan. They may not, though.
The easy and most cost-effective way in that situation, if you want insurance as a corporation of two, let's say, because you don't legally have to offer it, but if I'm the owner, I want insurance. The easiest way is to go the PEO route, in my opinion. For the money that's involved, you get a group plan. It's a much, much more cost-effective medical plan for you, probably better benefits. And for a very minimal fee, you go with a PEO, and you get to cover that. I can speak to that because BWSI, we belong to a PEO. And so I don't have to deal with benefits every year going up, down, the plan changing. This year it's Blue Cross. Mm-hmm. Next year it's Aetna. Our plans haven't changed besides cost, unfortunately, in probably 8 or 9 years.
Now, for the listeners, what's PEO?
There's preferred employer organization, I believe it is the technical term.
Yeah.
And basically, there's just a co-employer. It's a simple way to look at
employee
it.
Employee leasing?
Employee is exactly what it is.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And my impression, I think Matt can clear it up, and Jim, you might know this too, but I don't know this. The employee leasing, I have clients that have employee leasing. There's some good ones out here. Are the insurance plans as good as you can get by yourself?
Better. Oh. And I'll give you the example. We go through ADP Total Source, which is, I think, the second largest PEO in the country. And so we get the benefit as a small, local Arizona company of nationwide negotiation with our group size.
Oh.
So My insurance, the lowest insurance plan we offer is what technically would be called a gold plan, which is 80% actuarial value. That's the lowest one we offer. And cost-wise, as opposed to having to go into the individual market or the small business market, they couldn't touch it.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Jim, did you look at that too?
Well, we've talked about it. I mean, it, to be brutally honest, you know, PEOs a few years ago had a really bad reputation.
Absolutely.
They had this really unfortunate situation where they forgot to pay the employment taxes for people that were, you know, paying them to pay the employment taxes. And then when the PEO went down, guess what? The employer still owed the taxes.
They did?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. And so that had some, you know, but I think they've kind of gotten past that. So that's better now, I think. But I guess the question is, I mean, as you have a small business and you get bigger, I mean, you know, again, I suppose that what you do if you're going to have this kind of cost is, depending on what you want to do, is maybe you just say, look, up to, what, 49 employees? We just say, good luck, you're on your own?
Well, technically, there's a lot. And there's companies that are bigger than that are going to do that.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of my clients. Once you get past the 50, what's called full-time equivalent, which a lot of companies are going to pass 50 FTEs.
Right.
Then you're required, you're subject to the auspices of PPACA. I have to offer insurance. I have to offer a bronze plan. It has to be affordable. Or I have to pay a $2,000 fine per employee after the first 30. So I get to deduct 30 employees, and then I pay two. And that's considered an excise tax. It's not deductible. It's basically a fee that you cough up. So what a lot of my clients are going to do is they're going to offer an insurance plan. They know it's not going to be affordable. I can't imagine, especially when you're dealing with what I call a vulnerable wage population, lower wage, $10 an hour and under, let's say. Maybe let's go $9 an hour and under. They're going to go to Medicaid. They're not. You don't have to worry about those people. People that are $18 an hour, $17, $18 an hour and up, they can afford insurance. It's the people in the middle. Think of it like a donut. The people in the donut hole are going to be the ones that are squeezed, because even if you offered them an affordable plan, they're not going to be able to pay for it. They're struggling to put gas in the car and food on the table. Mm. Even if you as a business offered it, they're not going to be able to pay for it. So what a lot of clients are going to do is they're going to offer this affordable plan. Their employees may or may not take advantage of it. I'm not sure it's even going to be deemed affordable. Being affordable when you deal with lower wage people in that donut hole is going to be, I think, almost impossible to pull off. And so they're going to end up going, well, okay, you might qualify for a subsidy, you might not. I'm going to wait and see if you're going to fill out all this paperwork, go through all these hoops, and then I'll get hit. I'll get that 1411 certification, and I'll have to pay that $3,000 fine.
Mm.
However, the number of employees that are actually going to do that, one, and two, at the end of the day, that can afford the plan for these $12, $13, $14 an hour, those are the employees, I think, that are going to really get pushed.
Complex? Hmm. How do you spell complex?
Yeah.
Rolaids. R-O-L-A-I-D-S. Let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We're talking about Obamacare with in-studio guest Matt Kenny from BWSI, Executive VP. And also, this is Practical Business Solutions, starring Jim Hyten from Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis. Stay tuned for more good information. I'm going to ask the question, what about pre-existing conditions? I think it's coming up in 2014. Maybe that's a good part of the plan. I'm not sure. We'll find out.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, In addition to water and fire damage repair, our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
So welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Practical Business Solutions, heard here every first Monday from 3 to 4, starring Jim Hyten, right now are Hyten and Lewis, and in-studio guest Matt Kenny from BWSI Executive VP. And this has been amazing, Jim. This is complex, this Obamacare.
Very complex.
It's hard
very
to complex. Believe. Now, as promised, I did want to know a couple things here. Let's throw it out. We have about 10 minutes. Probably about 13 minutes left. Pre-existing conditions. I also want to ask the best and the worst of Obamacare. And you did, on the break, talk about fees. That got my ears up because I go, oh, my premium's going up. Let's start about pre-existing conditions. What can you tell us?
Those are forbidden as of 2014. So no plan can exclude you for pre-existing conditions. Now, that's everybody agrees with that. I agree with that. I see all the benefits of it. Unfortunately, that's where a lot of your premium increases are going to come in because you're going to have Sally that may have leukemia that I can't exclude that since it's a pre-existing condition. So that's where some of the fees come in. For example, for 3 years, you're going to have what's called a reinsurance fee. And for people that don't know, reinsurance is basically insurance against very large claims. So if my insurance plan, let's say, you know, gosh forbid I had cancer, and I'm going to have a $400,000 insurance claim, reinsurance protects the plan from that. So because of the way Obamacare is written, there's this reinsurance fee that's going to be, for the first year, it's going to be about $63 a year per covered person. They call it lives. Right. So basically everybody that you're covering, dependents, that kind of stuff, $63 a year, $525 a month. And that one's calendar year. It'll be due in January. It goes down. Next year it'll be 35% of that. The year after that it's going to be 50% of that. However, anytime the government tells me a tax is going away or going down, right, I'm very dubious of that. They're going to find a way that it doesn't happen.
Who's doing the reinsurance?
It's the IRS is going to, I think it's IRS or Treasury is going to actually give you a bill, because you have to report the people that you cover under IRS form. I think it's 6056. That's how the IRS knows who you're offering coverage to, who's on your plan, then they're going to send you a bill. It might be HHS. That I'm not as up to
snuff
on. Okay,
so because in my world, when I represent insurance companies, reinsurance is, like you say, it's for the catastrophic loss. And so usually it's like Lloyd's of London or some big, huge company that's reinsuring the loss. It sounds like this is just a fee for the federal government to be the reinsurer.
Well, yes, and I probably spoke wrong. I'm used to dealing with a trust, which is self-insured. Mm-hmm. If you have a fully insured plan, which the vast majority of listeners probably would, you won't ever see it. It'll go to your plan. Your plan will pay it.
And then pass it along to you.
Absolutely. There's also what's called a PCORI fee, which is Patient-Centered Outcome Research Institute. Basically, it's a research institute that's getting set up to investigate best-in-class methods for certain disease management. So let's just use diabetes, which is a big deal. PCORI is going to hopefully research the best ways to help people manage their diabetes or hopefully cure diabetes. But that one is $1 per covered person for 2014, and it goes up to $2 in 2015. It is supposed to sunset, I believe, in 2019. And again, anytime the government tells me a tax or fee is sunsetting, I have a dubious nature.
Is that like the Phoenix food tax?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, all right.
It definitely won't be sunsetting early, that's for sure. Again, though, your plan will take care of that. And then there's another fee. This is the one that should raise a lot of ears. It's called a premium fee that is assessed on your insurance plan that the Association of Health Insurance Plans has estimated in 2014 alone it's going to increase your premiums by 2%. And then by 2023, it's going to increase them by 3%. So it's an excise tax, basically, on your health insurance plan. So on top of normal health care inflation, which we'll talk about some of how the premiums are going to be calculated, you now have this excise tax that just next year is going to pop 2% onto your premium renewal.
Wow. Oh, my. So there's a lot to this, Jim.
Yeah.
So – and then – one of the things that people don't talk about a lot, they just hear this individual mandate. Everybody has to have health insurance. Well, for the first year, the individual mandate, if I don't have health insurance, it'll cost me $95. Most people, big deal, $95. Or $285 a family, or 1% of your income, whichever is greater. Where it's really going to start kicking in is 2016. That individual mandate tax, which is how they upheld Obamacare, basically, will go to $695 for a single person, or $2,085 for a family. So the idea of I'm not going to offer coverage, or I'm going to, you know what, maybe in 2014 it's not going to get that much traction from employees, the individual mandate.
Right.
2016, all of a sudden you start talking $2,100 that I have to pay. Then all of a sudden having health care and being able to offer it is going to be a major, major issue for employers. It's going to be a recruiting issue to retain your talent.
So a lot of residual things that could come out of this.
Absolutely.
Wow. So pre-existing conditions coming up starting 2014. So my guess is you could, like, if you're you just don't have to worry about underwriting. You could switch plans, and does that create competition, maybe lower prices possibly?
That is the way the legislation is written. As a me personally, a rather free market Republican, I agree with, in theory, that's what should happen. The problem is we're talking about the health insurance market, and there's not a lot of incentive for competition, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I know what our insurance premiums are. I deal with – we have hundreds of clients across the country, mm-hmm. and the ones that offer insurance, I know what their insurance premiums are.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a lot of cost differentiation if you're talking similar – actuarial value.
Wow. So, but you can change pretty quickly. So the underwriting process will be gone pretty much, right? And just, hey, sign me up. Here's my premium. You're covered, right?
Well, you can have a waiting day, a 90-day waiting period.
Really?
And that's 90 calendar days. If I'm an employer and you do not want to mess around with that because the fees are steep, they have given guidance that it's 90 calendar days. So if the 90th day falls on a Saturday and you want to sign them up on a Monday, that's not going to work. You got to sign them up on a Friday. It's not going to be something you want to play around with on this waiting period.
What about an individual plan?
Again,
a waiting plan?
Most plans, especially in 2014 and on, if I'm an individual, they probably won't have a waiting period.
Oh.
That would be my guess.
Oh, okay. Amazing. This stuff is amazing. Now, what's the best? And, well, before we get to that, premium. So, like Jim said, and I've heard, and we've all heard, it could go up 100% or whatever. What have you heard?
Okay, well, here's the reasoning behind that. Right now, but the cost differential between the lowest and the, let's say, most unhealthy, what they call banding. So if I'm young, healthy football player, that's what you'd call young and healthy, bulletproof. And then I'm 60 years old, I have some maladies, you know, like old people, as you know, as we all do, unfortunately.
Wait, I think we're going to object to this. Objection, Your Honor. Yeah. We're talking old, like 90, 95, yeah, am I right?
Let's talk really old.
Well, then you're dealing with Medicare.
Yeah.
But so what happens is right now there's some plans that there's a 15-to-1 banding. So I charge the, let's say, more infirmed 15 times more than I would charge young and bulletproof.
Oh.
Well, with the healthcare law, that's no longer allowed. The maximum you can have is 3-to-1. So that's where a lot of people are saying your healthcare costs are going to skyrocket, because the people that at the top, the infirm, you probably can't squeeze a lot more there. However, the young and bulletproof, so what's going to happen is the base
it's shifting
is going
who
to move.
Contributes.
That's basically the way the French work, is the younger, more healthy helps support the older, more infirm. That's the French system.
And that was, you know, that's always been the issue with the actuaries and the people in the health insurance companies, is that they were saying, you know, the only people we're selling health insurance to are the people that need it, that use it. And the people who don't use it, we're not selling it to. So, you know, we're basically not getting that young and healthy part that we need to support, you know, the people who do need it. So it's always been that issue of, if you get everybody in, maybe you can, you know, make it work. Problem is, I keep hearing numbers that it doesn't sound like they're going to get everybody in.
I don't think the tax and the individual mandate for the young and healthy is high enough. And so for $700, as opposed to that's a month and a half of premiums, I'll just pay the $700 and hope I'm all right. Because I can still go to the hospital if I have a catastrophic issue, and I can still get seen. I can still get treated.
Right.
So, because you can't legally turn, and I 100% agree with that, you can't legally turn somebody away. You have to get them stabilized and offer them treatment. So the problem now when you go to the emergency room with a you know, in flu season when there's, you know, 100 uninsured people in there, they have to, by law, see these people, whether they can pay or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And if they're really, really, let's say a heart attack, let's just use something, they have to stabilize them, and then they can transfer them, is my understanding, to, say, county. But you still have to get them stabilized before you transfer them. So you still have that outlay of cash.
Wow. So in the next couple minutes here, the best and worst of Obamacare. What do you like? Well, we know what we don't like, but what some of the good things you think there might be?
The two biggest things that I really like is the elimination of pre-existing conditions. I think everybody's on board with that. And as a father of three, I love the fact that I can keep my kids on my insurance till they're 26. Or, i.e., if they're listening, grad school. I think those by far are the two best things. And I think there's not a person, even if you're vehemently against Obamacare, I don't think you can argue against those two items.
Yeah, well, especially helps. And I think earlier than 2014, there were some exceptions to get young kids with really serious illness.
Absolutely.
To get them insurance. I mean, that I would sort of like that. I think that's sort of cool.
But, you know, the issue it brings up, though, is like I'm having this conversation with a lot of clients. Is right now they're saying, okay, so I know that my health insurance premiums are going to go up. They're going to be more. So I look at all of my employee benefits. And so what am I going to offer? I'm going to offer some kind of health insurance. Am I going to offer a retirement plan? Am I going to offer, you know, some of the other things that you might have in an employee benefit package? And what they're coming down to, they're saying, you know what, we're going to cut everything and have health care, and that's it.
Mm. Well, you can offer the retirement plan. You just don't contribute.
Yeah, you can do a 401k or something and
don't
contribute.
It's not ideal, but frankly, most people in this day and age don't have that defined benefit. It's more defined contribution.
Yeah, but I think what they're starting to look at is they have a certain amount of dollars that are going to go for employee benefits, and so they got to decide where do they go, and most of them are going to get soaked up by health insurance.
Absolutely.
So,
or they're just going to not offer it and pay the $2,000 an employee. There's a lot of companies that that's the route they're going to go because they can't financially, they can't make the numbers work.
Jeez. Wow. That, But then the employees have to be insured anyway, right?
They have to get their insurance from the exchange. The employee loses the FICA advantage from the 125 plan. And not only that, so does the employer.
Right.
The part that they pay is also tax advantage. Now they have to pay FICA on those increased wages. So it's not a cut and dried situation, and you lose a major tool in your HR toolbox for recruitment.
Man, this is complex, Jim.
Yeah, no, I think it's this whole area, people are going to have to look at it, and dollars and cents, it's going to be a real big thing to look at each and every year and say, you know, what's the best way of going?
Well, and how do you say I'm affordable now, but all of a sudden next year my premiums just went up 25% and I'm not affordable, but I have to offer a 60% actuarial value? So there's a lot of abacus bean counting going back and forth.
I think we've had experience with that. Yeah, I'm affordable now, but I'm not affordable later. It sounds like marriage.
You said that, not me. I'm happily married.
Okay, that's my commentary.
That'll be Dave's part of the show.
Cheaper to keep her.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They said marriage is grand, but divorce is 100 grand. Am I right, Jimmy?
That's right.
Yes, I think so. Wow, we're at the end of the show. Matt, do you want to give out contact information on your company?
Yeah, if you have anything you want to, I blog pretty frequently at bwsi.com. And if you have questions, I do get a large volume of email, but I don't mind trying to answer or point you in the right direction at mattk@bwsi.com.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Matt Kenny. This has been fascinating, I believe. And, Jim, how do they get in touch with you?
Best way is to call our phone number at the firm, area code 602-254-9900.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. We'll see you next month. And Matt Kenny, anytime you want to come on, this is really a very complex topic, but you made it really explainable. Thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Matt. See everyone tomorrow. More Breakthrough Thinking, and from 2 to 4. Have a good night. And go D-backs tonight, opening night.